Well, we're going to be looking at the third chapter of the book of Ruth tonight. I hope you love this little story. It's fantastic, really good. And I hope that the Lord has some good things to say to us as we get into it. Well, she could feel the hunger pains beginning to set in again. She hadn't eaten for over 3 days. The famine in the land was the worst that she had ever seen. So when her husband suggested that they move, that they pack up and they go someplace new, to a new country, she knew that that was the right thing. As little as she wanted to do it, she knew that that was really the only choice that she had. She didn't say a word that day as she packed her things. They loaded down the donkey and they loaded down the camel and they headed out of town. And as they left, she turned and she waved goodbye to the only friends and family that she'd ever known. As they disappeared over the horizon, she asked herself, why is this happening to me? This is the story of Naomi. Naomi. Even though her daughter-in-law, the book that we are studying tonight, bears her daughter-in-law's name, this is really, by all accounts, Naomi's story. And it's a story that begins with travesty and tragedy, famine, hunger, forced to leave your home, your family, and your friends. But it's not over with yet. It's only just begun. What we'll find inside of chapter 1 is that she and her husband and her family and her two sons will move to the country of Moab. And there in Moab, things will only get worse. Within the span of three verses, both her husband and her two sons will be taken from her in death, one by one. Absolutely unfathomable, the tragedy that this lady has to endure. But this is not all. Having lost her husband and her sons, now then she finds herself in the worst state possible. To add injury to insult, now then she is a widow and childless, heirless, in a society that only mattered if you were connected to a male. If you were a widow and you had no children, your plot in life was to beg and plead for anything that you could get in order to survive. This is where she is reduced to. She is now the marginalized of society. She's been chewed up and she's been spit out. And she has really no hope to speak of. So, she decides that she will return to Bethlehem, her hometown, with this daughter-in-law, Ruth, that she has acquired in Moab. And on the way back, everybody knows that she's a changed woman. She's not the woman she left as. In fact, the townswomen, they're at the gate and they see her coming and they say, could this be Naomi? Look, isn't it Naomi? We haven't seen her in over 10 years. She stops them and she says, listen, don't you dare call me Naomi, which in the Hebrew means pleasant. Don't you dare. Call me Naomi. From now on, you call me Mara, which means bitter, angry, upset. And the reason why you're to call me that is because the Lord's hand has been heavy and hard against me. I went out, and catch this phrase because it'll be important tonight. I went out of this city full, but the Lord has brought me back. Empty. Again, It's the story of a lady who suffered great pains, great misery. For the first time in chapter 2, at the beginning of it, we begin to see the first hopes of light begin to shine through. This daughter-in-law, Ruth, that she has acquired, Naomi's acquired, she decides, I've got to make a living for us somehow. So she goes down to the fields to glean because the Lord has provided the first harvest in 10 years. And while she's down there, she meets this handsome young buck named Boaz. And he's got a lot of land and a lot of money, a lot of means. And he takes notice of this hard-working Moabitess named Ruth. And he gives her special privileges that she wouldn't normally get as a gleaner. And so she gathers more than what she's supposed to gather. She catches his eye. And this is important. Why? Because we'll find out that he is a kinsman redeemer. Now, most of us don't know what a kinsman redeemer is. And that's going to be very important for our story tonight as well. It's important for you to understand that a kinsman redeemer in this day and time, he was from the father's side, the male side. And whenever a male was to pass away and leave a widow, what a kinsman redeemer would do is he had the right, if he wanted to come in and provide for that widow, to keep her from starving and suffering in poverty. And he could also do one other thing. One other thing he could do was he could come in and he could actually serve as a surrogate husband and provide an heir for that woman so that she did not spend her elderly days having to beg and plead. That's going to be very, very important for us tonight. All of this we see at the end of chapter 2. And at that point, we're left asking ourselves this question. What is God going to do? How is He going to vindicate this woman, Naomi? What is He going to do in order to provide for this woman who cannot provide for herself? Who doesn't have a way of making welfare for herself? What is God going to do? And this strikes a note with each of us in this room because each of us knows somebody just like this who is marginalized in society, who's on the outskirts, who doesn't have a way to provide, who's been given the short end of the stick. And we ask ourselves about those people. How will God vindicate Himself? How will God provide for people like that? And what we're going to see tonight in Ruth chapter 3 is this. That God provides for the outcast and those that cannot provide for themselves through the reckless love of His servants like you and like me. That He provides for those that cannot provide for themselves through reckless, dangerous, risky kind of love through people just like you and people just like me. If you have your bulletin, would you stand with me as we read God's Word, Ruth chapter 3. Then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, "My daughter, should I not seek rest for you, that it may be well with you? Is not Boaz our relative with whose young women you were? See, he is winnowing barley tonight at the threshing floor. Wash, therefore, and anoint yourself, and put on your cloak, and go down to the threshing floor, but do not make yourself known to the man until he has finished eating and drinking. But when he lies down, observe the place where he lies, then go under his feet and lie down, and he will tell you what to do." And she replied, "All that you say, I will do." So she went down to the threshing floor and did just as her mother-in-law had commanded her. And when Boaz had eaten and drunk and his heart was merry, he went to lie down at the end of the heap of grain. And she came softly and covered his feet and lay down. At midnight the man was startled and turned over, and behold, a woman lay at his feet. He said, "Who are you?" And she answered, I am Ruth, your servant. Spread your wings over your servant, for you are a redeemer. And he said, May you be blessed by the Lord, my daughter. You have made this last kindness greater than the first, in that you have not gone after young men, whether rich or poor. And now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you all that you ask, for all my fellow townsmen know that you are a worthy woman. And now it is true that I am a redeemer, yet there is a redeemer nearer than I. Remain tonight, and in the morning, if he will redeem you, good, let him do it. But if he is not willing to redeem you, then as the Lord lives, I will redeem you. Lie down until the morning. So she lay at his feet until the morning, but arose before one could recognize another. And he said, let it not be known that a woman came to the threshing floor. And he said, bring me your garment you are wearing and hold it out. So she held it, and he measured out 6 measures of barley and put it on her. Then she went into the city. And when she came to her mother-in-law, she said, how did you fare, my daughter? Then she told her all that the man had done for her, saying, these 6 measures of barley he gave to me, for he said to me, you must not go back empty-handed to your mother-in-law. She replied, wait, my daughter, until you learn how the matter turns out, for the man will not rest, but will settle the matter today. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. You may be seated. Well, let me give you an overview very quickly of what's going on here. What we have is a scene that takes place between a sundown and a sunup. Okay, a sundown and a sunup. All of this is done at night. There are going to be 3 different sections or acts of this particular scene, if you will. First of all, we're going to see in verses 1 through 5 that this great plan is created between Naomi and between Ruth. And then in verses 6 through 15, we're going to see the proposal of this plan, or the carrying out of this plan, the proposal of marriage to Boaz by Ruth. And finally, in verses 16 through 18, we're going to see the results of this proposal, this promise sent to Naomi by Boaz himself. So if you'll come with me to verse 1, we will begin as we look at the plan here that is concocted by these two ladies. You'll see there inside of verse 1 that Naomi comes to Ruth and she says, listen, my daughter, should I not seek rest for you that it may be well with you? Now, whenever in Hebrew and in this date and time, whenever you said, may I seek rest for you, you're talking about finding a husband for a woman. You're talking about finding somebody that can provide security for her. The question becomes, why is Naomi so concerned about this? And I think the answer is because she knows how important this is. She is looking at her life from here out and how bad it's going to be. And she knows that something needs to be done for Ruth so she doesn't end up just exactly like her. So she has proposed this plan, and it has several steps to it. The first step, you'll see inside of verses 3 through 4, is Ruth, take a bath. Take a bath. Girl, you stink. You've been working in the fields for too long, and enough is enough. It's time to get in there and shower up, take a bath, make sure you're not dirty anymore. Now, if you've ever wanted scriptural justification for telling somebody you work with or go to school with that they need to take a bath, here you go. Right here. Here's your verse. So she tells her, first things first, you got to take a bath, Ruth. And then the second step comes very quickly after that. I want you to put on some perfume. Perfume yourself. You'll notice the verse says anoint yourself, but this oil that they would have anointed them with had all kinds of spices and herbs in it. It smelled wonderful. Put on some perfume, Ruth. Make yourself smell good. Step number 3, put on a pretty dress. Dress up. Look nice, Ruth. Now, yeah, your version there in front of you on the bulletin says cloak. that's going a little too far. In the Hebrew, it's just dress. It's clothes. Put on some pretty clothes, Ruth. Naomi knows it's important for Ruth to look good, to smell good, if this is to come off right. Ladies, aren't you glad to know that it's not spiritual to look shoddy, to look frumpy? Here's a great example of very spiritual women knowing the importance of looking good. Isn't that nice to know? But beauty's not her only concern here. Beauty's not the only concern of Naomi. In fact, something else, all humor aside, is very, very upfront on Naomi's mind. Any time in the Scripture you see these things happening, bathe yourself, anoint yourself, put on a dress, that's a sign that you're ending your time of mourning. We see it again whenever King David, after he has been mourning and grieving over his child that he's losing with Bathsheba, in 2 Samuel 12:20, whenever he's informed that he has lost that child is dead, he stands up and we have this exact phrase. He anointed himself, he bathed himself, and he put on a dress. He was done with his mourning. Naomi's looking at Ruth and says, listen, you've mourned the death of your husband for long enough. Now it's time to put that behind you, and it's time to start seeking something else, something better, something in the future. Let's look towards that. Step number four we see here, that timing is going to be very important. It's going to be very crucial. They're to wait until Boaz has finished eating and drinking. Naomi's a very, very bright woman. She knows exactly how men work, right? Ladies, you want to know how men work? It's very, very simple. Wait until they're done eating and drinking and they're in a great mood, and then come ask them whatever you want. Come ask them whatever you want. That's exactly what Naomi's doing. She knows that if this is to come off, Ruth has got to approach her at the right time. Approach him, Boaz, at the right time. Wait until he's ate and drank, and then go, Ruth. And then finally, step number five, she's to go in, uncover his feet, and lie down. Now, folks, there's some very sexually suggestive language here in the Hebrew. We won't get into it tonight, but just let me be clear. What is being suggested here is that she do something to Boaz that makes no mistake in his mind that she is proposing marriage to him. So that when he wakes up, she will be lying at his feet, his legs will be uncovered, and he will go, whoa, this woman wants to be married to me. That's exactly what Naomi has in mind. But let's look now at Ruth's reply, verse number 5. What does she say? How does she take all of this? The reply, all that you say, I will do. Ruth's trust is incredible, folks. Absolutely amazing. Her trust and commitment to this lady, Naomi, is absolutely phenomenal. I mean, can you imagine all the things that could have gone wrong? Everything that could have gone wrong with her going down in the middle of the night to meet a man, to be alone with a man. There are so many things that could have been that could have happened that could have gone wrong. She could have been found out, and both her and Boaz's reputation would have been completely ruined. Completely ruined. Boaz could have taken advantage of her while she was there, and she would have had no recourse. She could have done nothing about it. He would have simply said, she made the advance, I didn't. Or worse, Boaz could say, listen, I reject you altogether. I don't accept this sort of proposal. And now then her reputation in front of the town is completely and totally trashed. This is a very, very risky scheme. A very reckless venture, and yet Ruth does not question it once. She says, whatever you want, I'm doing. What is it? What is it that causes this woman to take such personal risk with almost no guarantee of return. What is it that is motivating Ruth at this point to do something this risky, this big, this crazy? We're about to see in the next section in the proposal. Verses 6 through 15. We're going to see here that Ruth goes down and she does exactly everything she's told. To the T, she follows Naomi's orders. She shows up. She waits till the right time. She goes in. She lies down. Can you imagine what it must have been like to be Ruth at this point? All the thoughts going through her head. She's lying at the feet of a man, not knowing if he will accept her or not. She's thinking, am I insane? Have I lost my mind? What am I doing here? Maybe if I hurry, I can just get out and I can escape, get back to Naomi, and nobody will ever know I was here. But worse, she's got all this time to ponder it. Boaz doesn't wake up until the middle of the night. She's laying there for this long, and you and I both know it's not doubting yourself that's the problem. It's the length of time that you have to do it. And yet Ruth is there doing this, lying there, being obedient to Naomi's commands for this long. And then all of a sudden it happens. Boaz wakes up and behold, verse 9, a woman lay at his feet and he said, "Who are you?" And she answered, "I'm Ruth, your servant. Spread your wings over your servant, for you are a redeemer." Folks, right here, the moment of truth has finally arrived. Boaz has woken up. He's found her there. What will he do? What will become of this? Will he castigate her? Will he throw her out? "What do you want, my daughter? Who are you, my daughter?" With eyes down, she probably says, "I'm your servant, Ruth." Boaz, you might be able to see him reach over and bring her eyes up to his as she says, "Spread your wings over me. Marry me, Boaz. For you are a redeemer." And right there, all of a sudden, something happens. She has followed everything to the T so far. And at that point in time, she changes something. You'll notice Naomi never told her to approach Boaz and say, "Marry me on the basis that you are a kinsman redeemer." She just told her to approach him and say, "Marry me." But here, Ruth adds something of her own. And it's very, very significant, folks. Because what Ruth is doing here is she is saying, "Listen, I have approached you for marriage on purpose. I could have married anybody else that I wanted to, Boaz." And this is something that will be made plain here in just a second. She could have married any amount of younger men that she wanted that were richer or poorer or better looking than Boaz. But she comes to Boaz for a specific reason. "Boaz, I've come to you because you are a kinsman redeemer and the rest of the guys are not." What is she saying? What does she want from Boaz? What she is suggesting to Boaz is, "Boaz, listen, I want you to marry me, and when you marry me, we are going to provide our firstborn child for Naomi so that she will be taken care of in her old age. That's the reason why I've risked so much to come here to you tonight, Boaz. I could have gone to anybody else, but I've come to you because you're the only one that can fulfill this vow of providing an heir for Naomi. I've risked it all. I've been reckless in all for Naomi and not myself." And now we see why she's risked so much. But how does Boaz respond? Does he castigate her, as I said a while ago? No. In fact, in verse 10 and 11, we see that he says, "May you be blessed, for this last kindness is greater than the first." The first was when she came back with Naomi from Moab. And Boaz agrees to grant this request to Ruth. He will marry her, he says. But then we find out that there is this issue of a nearer Redeemer in verses 12 through 13. And so we don't have time to discuss that tonight. That will come to bear inside of chapter 4. It's just to say that this is great storytelling here, because finally we come to the point of the story that Naomi's about to be taken care of. And yet, there's a catch. There's this nearer kinsman that's got to be dealt with. Verse 14 and 15. So she lay at his feet until morning, but she arose before one could recognize another, and he said, "Let it not be known that a woman came to the threshing floor." And he said, "Bring the garment you are wearing and hold it out." And so she held it out, and he measures in 6 measures of barley here. Now this is 60 to 80 pounds of barley, folks. Here's little Ruth. Can you see her? She's got this sack on her back, and she is struggling to get back to town. And in the middle of all this, as she's bringing all of this barley back, we see Naomi back at her house. She's wringing her hands. She's wondering, how has this gone? Did I do the right thing? Did I send her to a situation which I should not send her to? Oh, man, did I do the right thing? And then all of a sudden, knock at the door. She opens it up, and there she sees little Ruth with a grin from ear to ear, sack of grain on her back, 60 to 80 pounds. And she knows that things are going to be okay. Notice in verse 16 what she says. Then she told her all the man had done for her, saying, "These 6 measures of barley he gave to me, for he said to me, 'You must not go back empty-handed to your mother-in-law.'" And you see, here at this point, you can see Ruth saying it, and it's coming out of her mouth, and she doesn't even know what she's saying, but Naomi knows. You better believe Naomi knows exactly what that sack of grain represents on her back. Notice what he says. "You must go back to her, but you must not go back to her empty-handed." Remember what she said. "The Lord took me out full, but he has brought me back empty." Boaz is telling her, "Listen, Naomi, you will not be empty-handed from now on, because I am promising you through this grain that I will give you a child. I will give you an heir that will take care of you through your daughter-in-law, Ruth." She's being promised food. She's being promised children. She's being promised security inside of this sack of grain. One commentator put it this way: the seed to fill the stomach was promise of seed to fill Ruth's womb. Does she get it? Does she understand? Verse 18 shows that she does. Naomi replied, "Wait, my daughter, until you learn how the matter turns out, for the man will not rest, but will settle the matter today." The message comes through loud and clear to Naomi. Because of what Ruth has done, I am going to be taken care of. Because Ruth was risky and reckless in her love towards me, because she was willing to give it all up for me, I am going to be taken care of. Now, folks, we close. And I ask you this question tonight. How much are you willing to risk for the welfare of others around you? Are you the kind of person that will risk your own reputation, your own safety, your own well-being? Will you risk it all? Will you be reckless for those around you that cannot provide for themselves? Or to this point in life, are you primarily characterized by the pursuit of your own happiness, by the pursuit of your own personal advancement and your own security? Has life been more about you or about others to this point? What we see inside of Boaz and Ruth is a story that challenges us tonight to get rid of indifference, to get rid of selfishness and to give recklessly for those that can't give for themselves. To live a life of self-deprecation. But there's a problem. And the problem is this. That we never do this. We never live this away simply by being told to. We never live this away like Ruth and Boaz simply because we see them living like this and us hearing, oh, I should do that. Yeah, that's right. Because we all know it. You know it. I know it. We know that we ought to be living like this, but we don't. What's the catch? What's the answer when we know we ought to be living like this, but we won't? Folks, the answer lies in this. It lies in Jesus Christ, in recognizing that Christ Jesus was the one who lived the most recklessly, that He abandoned everything for you and I. He abandoned His reputation. He abandoned His security. He abandoned it all, even to death upon a cross. He lived that recklessly for you and for me. And as we see Him do that, as we understand that great love given towards us, we too then begin to live like a Boaz and like a Ruth, abandoning it all for those around us that can't abandon it all for themselves. Risking it all for those around us that have nothing to risk on themselves. Amen.